From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in the early 1980s when a young man, a high school student, a Catholic at a Catholic school, was struggling with his own identity. He was gay, but he had put up many barriers in his life, essentially barriers that prevented him from fully realizing and embracing who he was. And so Gregory Girard went through life as a Catholic, someone who did embrace the idea of God, thought about becoming a priest himself in those early days, and wrestled with many things, and eventually did have to embrace who he was. His memoir is a book called In Jupiter's Shadow. Gregory Girard is also someone who instructs writers at Writers and Books in Rochester, and he is the man behind The Big Brick Review, which is an annual essay contest that has a deadline coming up. We're going to get to that later in the hour, but I want to start with his memoir and his story. Gregory Girard, welcome back to Connections.
Thank you, Evan. Always great to be here.
I deeply enjoyed In Jupiter's Shadow. And,
thank you.
It was raw and moving in many, many ways. And I commend you for sort of diving into who you were, but also acknowledging that in, for many years, apparently you put up this barrier to yourself, even when kids your age and your brothers and people were putting posters of good looking girls on their walls, you figured maybe that will help. Right. I mean, it was all these things that would help spark this identity issue with you. It was fascinating.
Yeah, I think that is probably a pretty common story among GLBT youth.
And so I want to kind of go back to the beginning of In Jupiter's Shadow, but explain the title. For our listeners who maybe are less familiar with the Jupiter Jones of the world, tell us what In Jupiter's Shadow means.
Sure, I have a literal and a literary kind of concept behind that title. In Jupiter's Shadow literally refers to Jupiter Jones, who's a character from the Three Investigators crime series, which was a series of books that I loved as a kid. I loved them so much that I actually identified with the leader of the gang, Jupiter Jones, who was kind of chubby and smart and outsmarted the crooks. And he built a headquarters for them to do their investigation procedures and cases and so on and so forth. It was a natural extension for me to literally mention that I was in his shadow. I tried to be like him. I did actually try to solve cases at my father's grocery store when I was a kid. I did build a headquarters in our barn so that I could run my cases, and had a couple of friends try to get on board as fellow investigators. So the literal interpretation was just the reference to this literary character.
And for this character for you, there's a lot of themes in the book, frankly, from some gastrointestinal issues to the notion of solving these mysteries and being in Jupiter's shadow. You were raised to be a God-fearing child in a religious family, yeah?
Absolutely, and I dove in headfirst for that. That was very much my identity as a kid, and it certainly still influences my behavior today.
Pretty big family, five siblings?
Six of us.
I'm very traditional. Six of you, so you have five siblings, right?
Correct. Oh, yes, thanks.
I'm not great at math, but there you go. So you have five siblings, and you were the youngest.
Correct.
Which isn't always the easiest.
I found it as a bonus slot. You have different roles in the family. The older children traditionally end up babysitting the younger ones and having a lot of responsibilities that way. And then the middle kids have all the middle child issues and, had to go to bed at 7 o'clock and things like that. And by the time the youngest kid comes along, I remember Garrison Keillor made a joke about this, that the parents are too tired out to figure out what to do with them. So they kind of give them some free rein, which I certainly had. And I got the benefits of that.
And so in the book, you recount that story growing up, and it wasn't just a child who was pushed to be religious. You were trying to embrace that. You were embracing that. You thought about, eventually, do you become a priest? I mean, all these thoughts run through your head, didn't they, growing up?
All that and more. I mean, I felt, as a very young child, inspired. I had read, I grew up in Catholic church and Catholic grammar school and Catholic high school, but I remember being very young and reading books about the saints and just wanting so much to emulate their lives. And there's a story in here you probably remember where I was, I slept on boards for a couple of nights because the kids who saw the Blessed Virgin in Fatima had done something similar to offer sacrifices up.
So you really were emulating in many ways. So you were in, and yet, as any child does, you start to grow up, you go through adolescence and sort of the sexualization process, and there are various people that we meet in Jupiter's shadow who, my take was you had to sort of confront who you were and who you weren't, and there were times in the book where I was trying to yell at you to say, Greg, it's okay, you're gay, come on, you know, own this. And
right.
So let me go back and start with Adam. You had experiences, and actually, if I'm jumping too far ahead, because I think it's fair to ask you, maybe we'll pull back and ask you, I know you're someone who has read your work in front of audiences before, and there's a couple passages that you are willing to read for our audience.
Absolutely.
And so let me kind of, before we even jump ahead,
sure.
Let me ask you what you'd like to read first.
Sure. Why don't I read the very beginning chapter?
Sure.
It's really short, and it just kind of sets the stage for who I was, who our family was, and what my relationships and struggles were kind of foreshadowed.
Mm-hmm.
This is called Chapter Zero, OK, 1973. Halfway through the homily, I started to get anxious. I was wearing the new pale gray coat I received on my seventh Christmas. It was toasty inside St. Patrick's, where the brightly colored figures on the window glass held the crisp morning outside, yet sent prisms of sunlight to bathe the parishioners in warmth. Nonetheless, I wore my jacket in the polished wooden pew near the front on the left, where we always sat. The coat was my favorite. It had snaps everywhere. I had begun experimenting with the snapping combinations on Christmas morning. The Gerard clan filled a whole row, like the Dernbecks, who chose the middle right, and the McCormicks with their bright red hair, who always came in late and got whatever seat they could. I sat at the end of the pew, closest to God in his tabernacle, trying to get my arms separated. There were two snaps at the end of each sleeve, designed to make the wrist opening smaller. While Father McFarland spoke passionately about Jesus and his immense love for us, I'd discovered that the right sleeve snaps were a perfect fit to the left and had managed to join all four. Initially pleased with this variation, I now struggled to get my hands free. The game's appeal diminished exponentially with my wrists bound. My oldest brother Paul, the church organist, launched into Faith of Our Fathers as I lifted both arms and yanked. The snaps didn't yield, but I toppled sideways out of the pew and crashed hard into the center aisle, hitting the floor with a tremendous thunk. I didn't move for a moment, adjusting to my new perspective. I saw mortified faces as my oldest sister, Molly, jumped to help. I watched Father McFarland, his long beige robe billowing, as he stepped down from the altar to assist. In the brief moments before they rescued me and I sat safely back in the pew, I lay there, struggling, awash in embarrassment and shame, knowing that the priest and my family and the congregation and God were all watching me, wondering if I was okay.
That's Chapter Zero of In Jupiter's Shadow by Gregory Gerard, my guest in studio. And so, Greg, since the publication of this book, and frankly, in your conversations with LGBT youth, you do think your story rings true for a lot of people. There's a lot of commonality for LGBT kids and then preteens and teens.
I do. I think there's some touch points, and then I think the story is dated, so there are some divergence points between today's LGBT youth and back then. But for me, when I was in my 20s, when I was really struggling with this still, I found a book called The Best Little Boy in the World by Andrew Tobias. And that book, in a way, saved my life. It helped me find somebody who I could identify with and some of the internal struggles and some of the mental perseverations that you go through. I really connected with him, but he was intelligent, he was funny, he was a successful businessman. And that book made such an impact on my life that I actually wrote him letters later in life and was able to connect with him. That said, the component that was missing from his book for me was a religious aspect. He did not grow up in a religious family, and he did not even explore or touch on that issue. And I felt strongly that that was a gap that I wanted to help fill. There are many voices out there from the LGBT community who help their testimony and share support in that way. But that was part of the motivation for me to want to share my story and talk about some of the struggles that are unique to religion.
Sure. So in other words, a lot of memoirs out there, but not a lot like this. The book is In Jupiter's Shadow. It is available. Where can people find it, Gregory?
Sure. It is in the Monroe County Library System. And I love to point people to their independent bookstores. So if you Liftridge Books and Writers and Books bookstores both carry it, or if you're an online kind of person, you can get it at all the Amazon and Barnes & Noble in ebook format or hard copy.
So as you go throughout the process of growing up, and we're not going to hit all the details in this conversation, but you write a lot about your family, your father, and then some of your experiences as you started to confront some of the challenge of discovering your identity. Is that a fair way to describe it?
I would agree with that. The tagline I put on the back of the book is, hiding from others is easy, hiding from yourself is trickier. It is such it's humorous to look back now and see how much you can do to yourself to hide things from yourself. And it's that whole being in your head kind of person, which I am. It has to do with, and this was tying back to the title and its, you know, more literary or metaphor kind of meaning. It's about having things that you're so afraid of or that are in the shadows that you don't really want to confront and put in front of your face. We come up with these really complicated ways to work around them or make excuses for them or help not see that, you know, for me it might have been that I was too fat or that you're gay or that you're not good at something. Or, you know, we all have those, I think, as human beings. And for me it was definitely, as a kid, like you were saying at the beginning, hey, Greg, you're gay. Hello.
Well, you know, reading the book, I had the advantage of knowing that. But at the same time, you know, this is a real person's story. I mean, this is not a fiction drama. This is a memoir and your own experience. And yeah, as the reader, I'm rooting for this actualization, this revelation to happen, so you can sort of shed some of that struggle that comes with, well, my goodness, if you can't get fired up as a kid, you love mysteries, right?
Absolutely.
You love the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew.
Yep.
If you happen to stumble upon, say, someone's Playboy with a Nancy Drew in it as a kid, the actress who played Nancy Drew, that doesn't do it for you, having already loved mystery, then at some point you're going to have to confront something.
You would think so.
How old were you when that happened?
The confrontation? I mean, it's a process. There was no one particular event that I can pinpoint, but I can hit some of the touch points. You know, as a teenager, you're obviously aware of who you are attracted to, who you have crushes on, what gets you excited. And when I began to realize that was other boys, not girls, like the rest of the world was telling me it should be, it's like, So I think, you know, in the book, I went and did some research and they said, oh, it's, you know, Masters and Johnson said, hey, that's normal for a teenage adolescent boy. It will gradually move on and morph into attraction to the opposite gender.
So even at the time when you're looking for answers, you're presented with a possible answer that, hey, this is common for heterosexuals.
Yes. And that I held on to that for probably about, you know, 6 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. You know, I was 18 at the end of the book. That's where I cut off the story. At that point, I wrote a letter to myself, and I said, I wrote a letter. I wrote it in my journal, just, I am gay. And then I went to Ellison Park one day. It was after the end of the book, and I wrote a letter to God, and I said, Dear God, I am gay, and it really scares me, and I don't know what to do about it. And I could not talk about that. It was such a secret, and I felt so much shame and so much concern about judgment for that I could not talk about it openly. I still have that letter.
You still do?
I do. I'm a huge saver, and I'll talk about that when we get to the Big Brick Review. But
let me let me then kind of go throughout some of the dramatic points that we come across in Jupiter's Shadow. Kids like to play games. They play Spin the Bottle. They play Truth or Dare. And you did too. You played variations of that game. And I think you were 14 at a time when, and again, I'm trying to remember back here because I don't have the notes exactly in front of me.
Sure.
14 with Adam, you'd done a variations of Truth or Dare, and it gets more sort of daring, and it culminates in essentially a sexual experience.
I would say yes, and I was actually 13. I was before.
I'm sorry, 13. Okay. I apologize. So 13, and sometimes it's kids being kids, but you wake up the next morning feeling confused. Feeling what?
Going back to gastrointestinal, feeling a gnawing pit in the bottom of my stomach that something was wrong. It wasn't something that was so right or so wonderful. It was so, there's something wrong here. It's actually, that experience is kind of what kicked off or certainly intensified my secret investigation of this mystery. Why was I attracted to boys?
And you use, you use as a vehicle. That's not even fair. Your own stomach knots and pains, et cetera, came up frequently, and they came up, looking back, it's easy to see. Every time that reality started to stare you more in the face, it seems, it physically hurt you at times.
Absolutely, and I think that, again, is very common, not to just somebody who might be hiding a gay secret, but so many of us have so many things that are difficult to face or difficult in life. And for me, coming from a big-boned people, overweight was a big issue for me. I was diagnosed with nervous stomach when I was 10 years old. And, I used to throw up sometimes because I was so anxious about things. And that kind of evolved into, I'm just going to eat away this anxiety. And I was a pretty large teenager and up and down the rest of my life.
Bigger than you are now? Because you're not that big of a guy.
I've been up to 300 pounds in my life.
Much
I am not near
guy.
There yeah, right now. But yeah.
Okay. My guest is Gregory Girard, the author of In Jupiter's Shadow, the memoir. It's listed as a memoir and mystery. And again, the mystery
I was trying
is,
to carve out a new genre there.
Well, but essentially the mystery is, who Gregory really was and trying to solve that for himself. And this is certainly a book that unfortunately I think a lot of gay teenagers, gay adolescents will relate to. And we're going to get to a little bit more of that in a moment here. You can join the program if you want to call, comment. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. So you go throughout this mystery of who you are, confronting it, and you tried to date girls. And in fact, you didn't just try. You did. There was a girl named Beth, especially.
Yep.
And actually, there was kind of a little triangle going on. There was a guy named Bob and a girl named Beth.
Yes.
And you started dating Beth. And what I laughed out loud at that. You knew that first date, if it went well, you probably were going to have to. The requirement was you may have to give her a goodnight kiss.
Yes.
She may be expecting it. You certainly didn't seem to want it. But you also knew in the movies the way it always looked, and you actually ended up with like a Hollywood-like good night kiss with this girl on the first date.
Yeah, she was actually more aggressive than I was to it, which kind of helped it happen.
I would say much more aggressive, as in it would never have happened at all. Yeah. But it was a sort of a Hollywood ending for that first date.
Yes, but as true with a good Hollywood movie, what's the secret underside, the cracks that aren't showing?
Well, absolutely, and I forget the exact phrase, but essentially your reaction was not just because, I think of my dates with first kisses and things like that. I'm sure in your own romantic life, you're married now, right?
Yes.
In anyone's romantic life that they're really invested in, you can go back to a first kiss with anybody, and that's probably a moment that stays with you. The reaction is not usually
great relief.
Yeah, great relief, and wow, I actually did it and got that out of the way.
Yes, check that box.
right. But what's interesting is your reaction, and the date with Beth was you were how old? I was trying to remember.
17.
16, 17. Okay. you don't have this jubilation. It's like, relief, I got the kiss out of the way. But she wants to keep dating. And there was more kissing going on. And I guess it just probably, maybe it got easier. It was more like a routine for a little while.
I'll say that, and I don't can't speak for the entire LGBT community, but for myself, you know, I really did care about Beth. So that was a way for me to be close with her without being physically attracted to her.
So you are dating Beth, and yet you're spending more time with your friend Bob. And there was one point in the book where you would occasionally, you guys would occasionally give each other massages because, you know.
We're talking about Bob now, yes.
We're talking about Bob. massages in a way that weren't, especially to Bob, overtly sexual or not meant to be. But in your mind, all of these things are sort of swirling. And at one point, you write that you found yourself sort of reaching out to Jesus, saying, whoa, you know, sort of kind of pull me back from this in a way. You know, steer me another way, or don't let me feel this with Bob.
And that's very typical of my behavior then. As I talked about as a kid, I felt a very strong connection to something greater than myself, which back then I was very clear that was God, and that was what I had learned through the Catholic Church and Jesus. And that connection felt as close as a partnership, like an unspoken or one way, once described as two ways, but it was this, you know, very strong connection that I was always my fallback position for things. And being a guy up in my head all the time, it was very easy for me to be giving Bob a back rub and praying that nothing bad happened.
And that's not a healthy situation, to state the obvious. But what is the factor that religion played, that your schooling played at McQuaid? You know, you had a number of adult figures in your life that you would... we all do, who we could either have dialogues with in class, or the question was, how much do we share? How much can we feel like we share, whether it's in a diary or leaving a letter or kind of opening up? And you, at times, seem to be pushing toward that realization in your teen years without fully getting there.
Agreed. It didn't, that those realizations didn't, I was not able to express that until my 20s. But back then, as a teenager, I flirted with trying to talk about it. I was very close to Bob, and I did try to express that to him, and I tried to express it to Beth, and it didn't turn out the way I wanted to. You know, it didn't get open to be explored.
Well, there was actually a very sad moment in the book for me when you ended up breaking up with Beth. She essentially breaks it off because you're not showing a whole lot of interest. You're not moving the relationship forward probably the way she wanted to. You're spending more time with Bob. And it was probably a relief for you, not only breaking up with Beth, but that you were able to reassume that platonic relationship that you really did treasure with Beth.
Yes.
That, you know, stereotypically, I think of a lot of my own gay friends have great relations. My own gay male friends have great relationships with women in their lives. And so it must have been a relief for you. You break up with Beth, but you didn't lose the friendship. Then Bob says to you, he wants to date Beth, and they start dating, and you have to be happy for them. But what was really interesting was you decided that you felt you could trust Beth as a friend, and you were going to tell her. It seemed like it kind of came out pretty quickly that you decided to say, I'm in love with Bob.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, you love him as a friend. You know, yeah, we all love each other. And you said, no, I think I'm in love with him. She chose not to get it, or really didn't get it?
I'll have to catch up with her to see what her take on that is. My take on her take is that she really did not get that. I think she thought I was a sensitive guy, and that was very sweet. And, you know, we had been dating a bit, so I think it just did not occur to her. She's very intelligent. It's not something she would not have missed. I just don't think it occurred.
And I found that sad to me because, again, as you have this push and pull with your own identity and the effort to get out of Jupiter's shadow, solve these mysteries, right? I wonder what would have been different if Beth would have said, wow, Greg, you know, I'm putting the pieces together now. You know,
I can speculate on that because I did come out in my 20s to very slowly, just like that, with some very trusted friends. And it was still a long, drawn out thing. It didn't, my trust levels were so, it's just a very private, difficult thing, or at least it was back then, to talk about. So I think it probably would have been supportive for me, but it wouldn't have changed a lot, I don't think. That's just my gut speaking.
So I shouldn't assume that that was the hinge point that could have really propelled you to an earlier embrace.
I don't think so, not then. Yeah. Maybe today that would be a different thing.
Yeah. We're talking to Gregory Girard, the author of In Jupiter's Shadow. It's a memoir of his own life growing up, gay, religious, Catholic, went to McQuaid. And what I want to do is I want to take a 60-second break. We're going to come back. Greg's going to read another passage from later in the book. We're going to talk about more of his thoughts on how this book does relate to gay teens growing up, some of the challenges, unfortunately, that kids face. We're going to talk about It Gets Better. We're going to talk about McQuaid's reaction. And we'd love to hear from you if you want to join the conversation. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Welcome back to Connections. Gregory Girard, the author of In Jupiter's Shadow, and Greg is going to read now from later in the book. Kind of set the scene for us here, Greg.
Sure. Evan, you were asking how different adults and religion reacted to, affected my teenage, this secret that I was hiding. So I wanted to read a passage from later in the book when I am a junior in high school. And every junior is required to meet with a counselor at least once, a guidance counselor, to talk about their future. I was avoiding it like the plague because I had this tight box around anything related to I was attracted to other boys, that any conversations, including where I was going to go to college or what my family was like or anything, was so taboo to me, or I spent so much energy hiding that secret. So here's my high school counseling appointment that I cannot get out of. I couldn't avoid it any longer. I received a note on McQuaid letterhead, pushed through the slots of my locker. Your appointment with Father Hubert is scheduled for Wednesday, April 13 at 1 p.m. A minute before 1 on that Wednesday, the counselor's door stood open. Light and smoke streamed out into the hall. Jupiter always triumphed in a battle of wits, I thought. I'll just stay one step ahead of him and I'll be fine. I stuck my head in. Father? Greg, come in. Sit down. He stood, balanced his smoldering cigarette on the edge of the cut glass ashtray, then extended his right hand. I shook, feeling his cool skin under my fingers. We sat. He stared at me through lenses as thick as a detective's magnifying glass. You haven't been to see me yet this year, he started. No, I just got the notice the other day. I shifted in the armchair, trying to find the right pose for my legs. I settled on lifting my right ankle and resting it on my left knee. Very masculine, I thought. My foot twitched. I worked to control it as Father Hubert continued. Some boys come to see me even when they don't receive an invitation, just to talk. Is there anything you'd like to talk about? He picked up the cigarette, paced it between his thin lips, and leaned back in his chair. What was he thinking? No, nothing, I answered too quickly. I looked him in the eyes. He did the same, his silent stare boring into my brain. I dropped my gaze. Damn it. Father Hubert let out a long, slow breath, smoke pouring from his mouth and nose. He opened a file on his desk, my file presumably, and looked down for a few moments. I used the time to shift my left foot onto my right knee.
Your grades are very good. Have you applied to any colleges yet?
This was something I could talk about. Well, my oldest sister Molly lives in Cincinnati, so I've been thinking about moving out there. We're very close. I've looked for Catholic colleges in the area, and there's one, Xavier University. I'm thinking about applying there. He took another drag on the cigarette. The tip glowed bright yellow.
Just one college? It would be wise to consider a couple of options, depending on what you'd like to study.
Well, I'm really close to my family, so I think that's the best option for me. I know myself pretty well.
He didn't say anything. An uncomfortable silence lingered in the cloud of smoke. McQuaid has a large collection of college reference guides in the guidance office. Have you been there?
Yes, I looked up Xavier in one of the books. It seemed like a good school.
He leaned forward. I could see the lines in his face. I shifted my position again. Have you discussed this with your parents? He asked.
I'd told Mom about my plans.
Yes, I answered.
The cigarette burned down to the filter. He snubbed it into the ashtray with a series of jabs, then looked at me.
Greg, I want you to promise me that you'll visit the guidance office again and find at least two other schools to consider. It's best if you offer yourself plenty of options. I sensed we were nearing the end of the interview. I dropped my right foot to the floor and sat up straight.
Sure, Father, that's a reasonable approach, I said, putting on my best Jupiter tone.
He stared into my face a last time. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
No, I think that's it, I stood up.
My counselor rose to his feet and extended his hand. If you ever do want to talk, my door is always open.
Thank you, Father. I shook his hand and retreated, my breath coming in staccato bursts.
It's from In Jupiter's Shadow. Gregory Girard, our guest in studio. And before we start to wrap up a conversation about his book and more talk about the essay, and the essay is for Big Brick Review coming up, let me get a phone call. This is Lee in Rochester. Go ahead, Lee.
Yes, sir. I was listening to the show and I was just kind of stuck on it. Why is it necessary to declare to the world that you're a gay person? If that's the way you live, like why is it something that I need to know, that other people need to know? Like why is it something that you feel you need to defend or declare? And that's basically my question.
Sure. I've been asked that question quite a bit, actually. Even I remember I went to a confession one time to a priest that I knew from McQuaid, and I started out by saying, well, I'm a gay man. And he says, why do you have to, you know, why does that have to be the qualifier? And I guess my general response to that is it's not a matter of that I need to broadcast it, but I just need to be who I am. And that includes if it's a wedding ring on my finger and on my husband's finger, or a picture on my desk at work of my spouse, or a conversation about what my kids did this weekend. Those are the normal things that so many of us who are not GLBT take for granted. And I think when somebody who is gay just talks about it, sometimes it sounds like we're broadcasting, and I guess from my experience, I'm just trying to be who I am. I don't intend to serve an agenda as far as trying to put
honestly,
it in somebody's face.
I have to honestly say that that's what it seems like, because you know I'm a straight man, but I'm not opposed to like people being you know who they are. I'm just saying like you know. It seems like there's a push now in, you know, on TV, on radio, whatever you're reading, you see something saying that, you know, you have to be sensitive, you have to be open to different lifestyles. Okay. But, you know, it's like a continuous onslaught. It's like a campaign. It's like I'm trying to understand it.
Lee, thank you for the call. Let me also jump in and try to answer part of what Lee is asking about. Because I think what he is confusing as an onslaught is just a change in the culture where gay people are allowed to talk about their own relationships. And I've shared this story before, but let me say it again here because I think this is important. You know, I anchored commercial television news for 7 years, and it is no big deal for straight people on the news to say, hey, my wife and I were out at so-and-so. My wife and I, blah, blah, blah. And I've said it on this program. I've talked about my wife and my son on this program. But for a long time, I anchored alongside one of the most talented people I've ever met, and that's Edward Moody. And Edward, unfortunately, has moved on to other markets, and we wish he would have stayed in Rochester. But Edward is gay, and the rules are different. Edward could not as easily just talk about his boyfriend on the air. He couldn't talk about a husband on the air. I guess you could, but the rules were essentially, there are unwritten social rules about it. And so now Edward is somebody who says, no, I'm not playing by the old rules that say I can't be who I am. And it's not to broadcast. It's not to push an agenda or to create an onslaught. It's to sort of create parody that we're all people. And so if I mention my wife on this program, and I try not to burden our listeners with too much conversation about my own personal life. They're not tuning in for Evan Dawson's life. But once in a while it comes up, that's fine. If I were gay, I would hope that if I mentioned a husband, the reaction would be the same, which is essentially no reaction. The difference is now, when you hear gay people talk about it more openly, sometimes it feels like it's a lot, I guess, to Lee. Is that fair, Greg?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I think it's just more normal these days to be able to talk about it and not fear that you can't, I guess.
And it's you know, the media itself focuses on the new. So there might be more of the transgender news right now. Transparent just won the Golden Globe. So, you know, you get the focus. Who controls the media focus? But, you know, what is hot and what's not?
Sure. And again, if you want to join the program, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. I will also answer to Lee's question about why does Greg have to write a book about being gay and growing up as someone struggling with his identity. I'll tell you, as a straight reader of it, it only helps me further understand the challenges that especially gay teenagers go through. Our kids may go through. My son might go through. I don't know. That to understand Greg's experience, every person is different, but there are commonalities, no doubt. And I want to learn that people like Greg were praying to Jesus. Imagine, again, imagine you're 16. And maybe imagine you're 17 and there's someone you have an interest in and you actually are in a room privately with them. And imagine praying to Jesus to direct you away, to save you from that temptation. That push and pull is not something I've experienced, but I want to know about it. I want to know what people go through. And I think Gregory's book has really done a beautiful job of helping illustrate his story, but contextually what others may go through. Let me get to Don in East Rochester. Go ahead, Don.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I kind of like to respond to that last caller, if I may. He's saying it's a campaign. Well, it is a campaign because, let's say, up until the year 2003, in some states it was illegal to be gay. You could be prosecuted for having sexual relations with a member of your own sex. In Georgia, it was up to 20 years if you were convicted of that. The in most of the states today, it's perfectly legal to discriminate in jobs and housing, public accommodations against lesbian and gay people. So yes, it is a campaign because there is overt discrimination. And up until recently, overt criminality.
I agree with you, Don. I support what you're saying, that in some ways it is appropriate to stand up and be counted.
Also, almost always when you meet heterosexual people, they don't have to say that they're heterosexual. They'll talk about their wives and their kids and so on. Lesbian and gay people don't have that automatic, or up until recently, didn't have that automatic acceptance or outward appearance.
Yes, and what wonderful strides we as a community
absolutely.
As a people have made. I'm not talking about LGBT. I'm talking about America. To be where we are today. There's still work
it's
to be done,
struggle,
but holy cow!
It is a campaign. It is a movement.
Don, thank you for the call. And now all of a sudden the phones are on fire and I'm looking at Greg going, we've got 10 minutes and, and I've got to get to Big Brick Review. We're going to get to your phone calls. So let me, only because I know what's about to happen is we're about to lose the last 10 minutes in a heartbeat. Let me just conclude by saying, In Jupiter's Shadow, Gregory Gerard, the book is available now again at Writers and Books, Liftbridge Books, online through Amazon. And it's a very fast read, but let me conclude on the book by asking you, Greg, do you agree with my assessment? At least I'm looking at this saying, this is one person's experience, but it's probably indicative of a lot of struggles. What's the message that you have for people who are in your shoes, gay teenagers especially?
The message that I even wrote it in the acknowledgments at the end, I said, you know what, if there's a, because there, as you mentioned, there's a lot of themes in this book, but if there's something that jumps to the front, it is to be who you are. And that's the bottom line for me. I was writing up notes for this program, Evan, and I wrote, actually, I was talking about some kids, some gay teenagers who went to the McQuaid prom, two boys, 2 years ago, and McQuaid allowed them to do that, which I celebrate that they did that. And I celebrate that those boys were brave enough to be who they are. And what I ended up thinking about when I said that is, like, I love also when we get to the day where you don't have to be brave to be who you are, but you just be who you are.
That's very, very beautifully said. And briefly, before I jump back to the phones, Gregory, I know in some ways that affection for McQuaid, or there's a push and pull, hasn't always been smooth. What has been their reaction to your book?
The book came out in 2009. I did approach them to, you know, I had some stars in my eyes at the time. I'm good friends with Allison Smith. She wrote a wonderful memoir about losing her brother, Roy, who I knew. And it was a story that had themes of sibling grief. And also she became, you know, recognized her own homosexuality in that story. It was it's a wonderful, wonderful book. It was If All Rochester Reads, I think, in 2006. And Mercy, where she went to high school, celebrated that. They had her in for an all-school assembly. So I had those kind of stars in my eyes when I was thinking about my book, and which came out, you know, later than hers. And I did approach McQuaid with this thought that the original desire for me to write this book was to put my message out for people who might need to hear it. And for me, that's a 13-year-old kid who's sitting at a desk at McQuaid today who is struggling with the fact that he has a crush on his best friend and he doesn't know what to do about that. And he thinks he might be going to hell as a result. So I met with counselors at McQuaid. I did write a letter to the president, and I met separately with the principal. Their ultimate decision was that they thought it was a well-written book, but that they could not support it publicly. And I struggled with that. I was, you know, it kind of stuck in my craw because I at least wanted them to list it as an alumni accomplishment. And there had been another person who was an alumni who had a book the same month I did, and his was listed, but they chose not to do that. Now, they're not here to defend themselves on this point, so I am happy to say I still support them. I think it's a great place. If I had a son, I would consider sending him there. But what I was forced to do back in 2010 was I did talk to one of the counselors to at least have my book available in the counselor's office if needed, and I made an It Gets Better video. It is my hope that if a kid needs to hear this story, they can either see that video or they can go to a Monroe County Library and pick up this book or hear about it on today's program.
We got to try to be quick with callers. Elizabeth Pittsford, go ahead.
This is Elizabeth, and I just want to commend the author for doing what he's doing and continuing to do that. I was recently at a shelter, and I read this little sign. It said, I know that too many see me as the guy pushing a shopping cart or the guy who collects bottles. Little do they know I'm an automotive repairs man for quite a few in the community. Yes, I live in a tent. Yes, I make a choice that declines from the populace. But what I've learned over these years is that if some people only see me as the man who pushes the shopping cart, that's their problem. I've learned to stop worrying what people think and to be myself. And I listened to the author say, I'm encouraging that. And I thought, boy, at all levels, this is a very important message. And I commend him.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, thank you for the call. Beautiful message there. Let me get in California. This is John. Go ahead, John.
Yes, Gregory.
This is one of my high school friends who's in the book, John. Do you have a comment, Mr. John?
I just want to commend you, sir, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
John, thanks for the call. Are you listening online, I hope?
Yes, actually on my phone and online.
Well, that's great. And you want to give us a quick 30-second review of the book?
He knew Bob and Beth. He was standing on the sidelines.
I'm not in the book. That's all I can say.
You are, too.
What? Excuse me? No. Yes, I know the whole story quite well, and but I didn't know it at the time. So much so. So I'm still struggling now with the reading of the book, actually, and it's going to take me a while. But no, very important piece of work for people who are going through what Greg went through.
John, thanks. Thank you.
And I'll give you your $5 later, John.
Oh wait, I thought it was $10.
Well, oh sorry, John, we're out of time. Thank you, John, for the call. That was very nice of him, Greg.
Yeah, he's
you
a dear friend.
You didn't even plant that. That's very
first
nice.
First day of high school, he was the guy who loaned me his ruler, and we've been dear friends ever since.
So the book is called In Jupiter's Shadow. Gregory Girard is not only the author of this book, the author of a number of works and a number of genres. Greg's a very interesting writer. He crosses genres, and he's also instructs at Writers and Books in Rochester. The Big Rick Review is coming, and I've got a few minutes here, Greg, and I'm going to try to squeeze this in. So, the Big Brick Review is what?
The Big Brick Review is a new online narrative nonfiction journal. And I'll tell you how it got born. I have been writing for many years and taking courses at Writers and Books, and I've been a big fan of this online journal called, and also publication journal, called Tiny Lights. And it was a journal that had an annual essay contest in February. And it was something I looked forward to every year in the gray Rochester winter to have that contest and the hope that that contest gave me to be able to be published. Actually got my mom involved in it as well. She and I were co-submitters. She always wanted to be a writer as well. And the wonderful editor of Tiny Lights and I became very good friends. Her name is Susan Bono. So when I noticed this year in February that the website wasn't updated for the annual contest, I emailed her and said, "What's up? Is the light flickering?" And she wrote back and said she was going through a time in her life where she felt that this was a transition year and she was going to retire Tiny Lights. I felt a great gap, you know, that gasp of air sucking in that there's a space out there, and I wanted to fill it. So the short version is... she said, "Why don't you launch what you're thinking about, and I will publish, promote you to my subscription base." I said, "I'm on that." And over the summer, I was able to put together the Big Brick Review. The short version is, it has a mission to support emerging and existing writers, and it seeks essays that build on the narratives of our lives, finding new insight to old struggles. Old insight to new struggles, and all shades of gray in between.
2,000 words or less?
For the contest, that's true. It is going to have several outlets for writers. There will be different places. The contest is something you submit and pay to participate in. There will be an open writing window this spring. And actually, at the Writers and Books was very gracious to host a publishing party for the Big Brick Review last Friday night. We had a mini memoir contest at the party, and I got over 30 people who filled out a mini memoir, like maybe 60 words, and we were able to give out some prizes. And now I'm going to publish a few of those on the site as well. So it's Tiny Lights was the very first writing credit I was able to put on my resume because I did finally get an honorable mention in one of those years after I kept submitting to that essay contest. And that meant so much to me to be able to begin feeling like a writer that I want to give that back.
Okay. And so I've got 40 seconds. So deadlines and how to get involved with Big Brick Review.
Annual essay contest deadline, February 17th, 2015. You can check it out online at bigbrickreview.com. I drive everybody else to my own website, gregorygirard.net. That's my kind of main website that I like to tell people about.
GregoryGerard.net for Greg's work, BigBrickReview.com. If you like to write, if you're an essayist, if you know an essayist, you know someone who wants to break through as a writer, especially in narrative nonfiction, all the rules and information there. And again, the 2015 deadline is just about a month away, February 17th. There are cash prizes as well.
There are.
Cash prizes for that contest. Thank you for taking the time to share your story. And at least for your reader, who's me in this case, for all the consternation I had for young Greg, I look at you and I think it gets better.
It really does. Thank you, Evan. This time always goes so fast, and I really appreciate you giving some time for this topic.
Short break, and we're going to shift gears entirely. We had a lot of heavy topics that way. Let's have a little fun with some rock and roll next hour on Connections.